Let's see if it works now. That's more than anybody ever wants to hear me. Speaking of hearing me, let me tell you, the reason Tim preached this morning, this is kind of embarrassing and I feel guilty, but I talked to the elders recently and just told them I was feeling kind of burned out on the weekly grind and the weekly workload, and they were very kind and very, very supportive and immediately said, well, we're going to schedule guys for the 9 o'clock in July and take some load off of you. So that's what that was. That's what that is. So thank you, Tim. That puts work on everybody else, Tim and others who fill in for me, but thank you for that. And I know everybody's happy, but curious why that was happening. So that's why. Okay, Luke chapter 12. Last week we talked about a couple of points regarding money. You can't chase contentment. You have to learn it. And we looked at Philippians 4:11, Paul's statement there. And then we also talked about lifestyle creep. You know, we get used to nicer and nicer things and more money. And we just over time, we get accustomed to that. And we have to beware of that. And so that was last week. And then here's what we're talking about this morning to start out with. Beware of social comparisons. In Luke chapter 12, verse 13, someone in the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me." But he said to him, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator over you?" And then he said to him, "Beware and be on your guard against every form of greed, for not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Okay, so this begins a discussion, and Jesus is going to end up telling a parable here, but this is an interesting, the way that Jesus responds to this is interesting. And I'm 99% sure it was J.D. one time who made a comment or maybe mentioned this in one of his lessons that, who better to go to than Jesus to answer a question like this? You know, here's a dispute in the family, whatever was going on, about let's divide the inheritance. And who would be a better judge? Who would be more fair, more informed, do a better job of that than Jesus? And so this man comes to Jesus and asks about that. And Jesus is not at all interested in being in that role. And so he says in verse 14, "I'm not a judge or arbitrator. That's not what I'm doing." And then verse 15, he immediately said, "Here's what I really want to talk to you about is greed." And that's what he does. And so then he tells this parable and warns about greed. And you see in verse 21, "So is the man who stores up treasure for himself and is not rich toward God." And so greed is the desire to have more. Last week we were reading from 1 Timothy 6 and the love of money that's warned about there and those who want to get rich. So again, we notice that same theme here that Jesus is emphasizing attitude. So the man is asking about inheritance, and he might have a legal question in mind or a math question. How do we divide this inheritance in a way that's fair and or legal? And Jesus puts that aside and just addresses the heart issue and starts talking about greed. So don't put it in your mind that life is all about how this inheritance gets divided up in your family, which tells us something about the way we ought to be reviewing all of these material things. You know, we can do the math and we can do this and that and all that's fine, but Jesus here cuts to the heart. Exodus 20, verse 17, one of the Ten Commandments, "You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male servant or his female servant or his ox or his donkey or anything that belongs to your neighbor." Even back in the Old Testament here, Jesus warning about, as I'm calling it this morning, social comparisons. You look at your neighbor and you covet what he's got, whatever that is, his wife or whatever. And you covet that, and again, goes back to the heart, that human tendency to look at somebody else and desire that. And it's a dangerous thing, and it was addressed way back in the Ten Commandments. You know, a lot of good can be accomplished on social media, but one of the gigantic problems we have is this, social comparisons. We get on there and we see what other people have. Of course, they put their highlight reels out there, not the entire story. We don't know what's on their credit card bill or whatever, but all that's out there for us to look at and potentially covet. And that's a huge, huge problem. We need to be aware of that and careful with that. You know, maybe my family has a good house, a decent little house. It fills all of our needs. It's better than what a lot of people in the world have, most people in the world have, and everything's fine. But then I get on Instagram and I see my coworker give a tour of their house, and it's four times as big as mine, and it's got awesome furniture, and it's got all that stuff. And then I look around my house, and all of a sudden, I'm not as content anymore. And, you know, it gets to me. I said, well, we need some of that awesome furniture around here, you know, and that gets to me. And if I scroll and scroll and scroll and compare and compare and compare, over time, it gets to me. Maybe we go on a nice little family vacation, you know, nothing exotic, but we had fun. And then we get on Facebook and see 95 pictures that somebody else went on this three-continent vacation and looked at penguins and walruses and all, you know, and I thought, well, my little trip to Navasota is kind of lame compared to that, you know. And so, again, these social comparisons, and it gets me in trouble. And it comes back to the heart and coveting what somebody else has or is able to do. So we got to be real careful about greed. Be aware of that effect. Facebook is real, that effect from Instagram and YouTube and everything else, what it has on our minds. Looking at what other people have may very well be the main thing that is hindering me from learning to be content and staying that way. Okay, let me pause there before we go to Proverbs 15. Anything you want to add so far, sir?
Situation. Because you look at Joseph in the Old Testament, for situations where, as one who gives an inheritance, favors somebody.
Okay.
One gives more than the other.
Yeah.
And that happens very often. And I know it happens. And boy, you find out the heart of people. And I'm sure it's challenging not to be the one who's got something plus or some of the worst situations.
Bitter family disputes. Yeah, and so it's no surprise, Luke 12, that's the very thing that's being discussed there. If you didn't hear him, he's talking about, you know, an inheritance and maybe somebody gets more or less than the others. And think about Joseph as a biblical example. And if we had a lawyer in here who handled those things, I imagine they could tell us some stories about how bitter those disputes get in families. And again, that's getting back to our heart and covetousness and greed. Okay, anything else to add so far? I think we all know the truthfulness of this. We know that it's there. We know it's an issue, and we're just trying to be careful in our own lives. Look in Proverbs chapter 15, please. Did I see another hand? No. Okay. Proverbs chapter 15, in verse 16, better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love is than a fattened ox served with hatred. Okay, can someone put that in your own words? Just take a second there. Look back over verses 16 and 17. How would you put that in your own words? What are those verses saying? Okay.
Yeah, you follow the Lord, that's your riches.
Is that your hand?
It was. I was going to say, as long as you have the fear of the Lord, you will be content.
Okay. All right. That contentment is coming
from the Lord, our relationship with Him. Okay? Okay. Yeah, there you go. More money, more problems. Yeah. You know, here, the contrast is, look, here's somebody maybe that goes out and spends all their time and uses all their energy and patience pursuing money, and then they've got nothing left in the tank. And so family life is horrible, and relationship with God is non-existent, all because we've been chasing the dollar. And so that's what this is saying. Better is a little with the fear of the Lord than great treasure and turmoil with it. Better is a dish of vegetables where love. Can't go to the steakhouse, but at least we have love instead of hatred around the table. So don't sacrifice spiritual peace for money. You only have so much time. You only have so much energy. Don't use them all up to get money. You know, you can imagine you live in a huge mansion and have all these wonderful things that you can afford, but your family's a mess because you never made time for family. You never made time for God. That's just not a priority. I understand people make their own decisions. Your family might have problems for other reasons, but if it's because of your neglect, because you've been too busy chasing money, then that's a problem, and that's what this verse is addressing here. So don't try to keep up with the Joneses to the extent that your family is filled with stress and pressure and godlessness instead of God and peace. And we can look at a lot of celebrities as examples of this. They have a lot of money, a lot of things, but a lot of problems to go with it. Okay, anything else on that one? Turn a couple of pages to chapter 21, please. Proverbs 21. Let's do the same thing here. I'm going to read these two verses, and then if you can put them in your own words. Proverbs 21, verses 17 and 20. Verse 17 says, "He who loves pleasure will become a poor man. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich." Okay, and then verse 20, "There's precious treasure and oil in the dwelling of the wise, but a foolish man swallows it up." That might take a minute to cogitate on those. You got anything there? How would you put that in your own words? Keith?
By the time I had this really good job in the oil field, and I thought that was great. I thought that was comforting. But I walked home, opened the door, and I have a little girl waiting there to hold me. And that was the best thing of life. Sometimes we look at these things, these riches and stuff, and it's about image. Ever been to a poor funeral versus a rich funeral, or a poor wedding to a rich wedding? Big difference. The poor, it's about love. The rich, it's about image.
Okay? All right.
You know, the way we live our lives, the way we handle the money that we've been blessed with, changes our future. And if you love the high life, like in verse 17, he who loves pleasure will become a poor man. You're going to spend up your money. You're going to run right through your money. And your future is going to look pretty bleak there. He who loves wine and oil will not become rich. Think of somebody just parties up all their money and it's gone and that's it. They're no longer financially secure. The Message puts it like this, verse 20. And The Message is a very loose paraphrase of the Bible. And sometimes entertaining to read it, as it is here. "Valuables are safe in a wise person's home. Fools put it all out for yard sales." That's the way they translate verse 20. So the Hebrew there word there is swallows, not yard sales, but it does get the idea across that, you know, if we're irresponsible with our wealth, we just use it up, waste it away. It's not there. We're not able to help ourselves or others in the future because of that. And we need to be careful about that. Be good stewards of God's money. We're going to drill down more on that in a future point here. But, you know, say somebody inherits $1 million. And a wise person, a careful person, could use that in a productive way, whatever that might be. Maybe it's learn some trade skills that will help you get a good productive job and so forth. Or go get an education at college. Or start a business. Or do something that would cause that money to grow and support them in from that point forward. And a foolish person goes to Vegas, because that's what everybody does, and the money's gone in a week. You know, and you say, well, where'd that inheritance go? Oh, it's gone. But I had a blast. You know, and here this is saying, look, if we're not careful, if he who loves pleasure will become a poor man. We'll spend it up, it'll go away, and so on. Now, that's an extreme example, but we do that with just our normal paychecks as well. We ought to be careful, be wise with God's money and trying to handle that and steward that. Okay, comments, questions on that? I've got a quote I'm going to put on the screen, but anything you want to say before that? Joel?
I was thinking of Romans 12, 16, the second part where it says, "Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly." And so who we choose to spend our time with will really influence us in this regard. And I especially think about the college age students who are planning a career. You know, the people you will spend your time with and your job will influence your mindset on this, and you're going to spend a lot of time with them every week. And as you're potentially seeking out a mate, the person you're going to be married to, if they have dreams of a big house and a fancy car and all these great vacations, that's going to influence your mindset. And so association is not just, oh, who do we go to dinner with? It's who am I choosing to spend my time with? And we need to choose people who are humble and have a godly view towards possessions.
Okay, all right. Good.
Wise words. I hope we were all listening. Thank you, Joel. Good.
Goes much deeper than just like the present right now. Because when we're all here gone from this earth, we can't take anything with us. And so I think that like what it's also saying is that, trying to think of how to word this, if you're, you know, content with everything on earth and you're, you know, keep buying, 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 and you're not, you know, giving back to the church, and you're not giving back to people in need, and everything is just going to you and you're you, then, you know, even when you leave, or it's not going anywhere with you. So what's the point of all these scriptures and what are the questions?
Okay, that's right. I'll just use it
to pleasure myself during my time on earth. Good point. Sir?
Yeah, I was thinking about I don't know if that's the term for it, but, you know, he did all these things with pleasure, and he was not rich.
Okay.
In that sense, he was poor, and that is like the poverty, even though he had endless pleasure.
Okay, that's right.
What kind of rich is it talking about? He wasn't spiritually rich, Solomon, after his experiments. Good point. Keith?
1 Corinthians 9:24-25 on this. It's going to be used slightly different, but do you not know that those who run in a race all run, but only one receives the prize? Run in such a way that you may win. Everyone who competes in the games exercises self-control in all things. They then do it to receive a perishable wreath, but we an imperishable. Every man needs to run his own race. Every person, run your own race. Exercise that self-control. It doesn't matter what the other person places it. It matters how you run it.
Okay, self-control
is a huge part of what we need to be doing as God's people, and certainly has a huge application with money. Beware of social comparisons. This is an illustration from Morgan Housel. He says, consider a rookie baseball player who earns $500,000 a year. He is, by any definition, rich. But say he plays on the same team as Mike Trout, who has a 12-year, $430 million contract. By comparison, the rookie is broke. So these are real numbers, you know, thinking about real comparisons here. And the illustration continues. But then think about Mike Trout. $36 million per year is an insane amount of money, but to make it on the list of the top 10 highest paid hedge fund managers in 2018, you needed to earn at least $340 million in 1 year. That's who people like Trout might compare their incomes to. And the hedge fund manager who makes $340 million per year compares himself to the top five hedge fund managers who earned at least $770 million in 2018. Those top managers can look ahead to people like Warren Buffett, whose personal fortune increased by $3.5 billion in 2018. And someone like Buffett could look ahead to Jeff Bezos, whose net worth increased by $24 billion. In 2018, a sum that equates to more per hour than the rich baseball player made in a full year. So one of the reasons we need to be careful about social comparisons is that only one person in the world can win that game at a time. And by the way, did you hear about Elon Musk a couple of weeks ago? First trillionaire in the world. So we can update these numbers now. Everyone's looking ahead. Jeff Bezos can be chasing Elon Musk. And I understand those two guys like to go at it anyway. So only one person at a time can win the comparison game. Beware of that game, sir.
You see, Elon Musk, he was a trillionaire for 10 days.
Oh, did he already drop down? Yeah, okay. Those guys are always up and down because of the stock market.
Yeah, they're invested. And, it fluctuates somewhat. But for a few days, I guess he was the world's first trillionaire. He probably will be again next month. Okay. Any other questions, comments on that? Social comparisons, all that sort of stuff. God is helping us. He's warning us. Look, you know, we don't have to go out and experiment. He's warning us ahead of time. This is a trap. You get into this, the love of money, wanting to get rich, and it's gonna harm you. You're going to fall into Satan's trap. So greed is a big pitfall. We're trying to be careful with that. Social comparison is a big part of it. Okay. All right, next point here. Use money as a tool for God's work. Let's go back to 1 Timothy 6 and notice a couple of verses there. Got a lot of verses here on this that I want us to think about. 1 Timothy 6 is where we'll start. Plenty of warnings in the Bible about loving money, but we don't want to leave the impression that the Bible only has negative things to say about money. That's not true. It does not say negative things about all rich people, or that being rich in and of itself is wrong or sinful or bad in any way. It's what we do with it. And what we ought to be doing, as we do with any resource we have, is using it as a tool to serve God. 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse 17, instruct those who are rich. So he's talking about rich people for sure now, and that would include us as the average American person today. Instruct those who are rich in this present world not to be conceited or to fix their hope on the uncertainty of riches, but on God, who richly supplies us with all things to enjoy. Instruct them to do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share, storing up for themselves the treasure of a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is life indeed. Notice what's not said there. He does not say, tell those rich people to get rid of their wealth. Tell them that in order to have fellowship with God, they have to write a check to the nearest charity and just get away from that and take a vow of poverty. He doesn't say that. He warns them, don't put your hope on that, on the uncertainty of riches. Make sure your hope stays on God. But then he tells them, use it the right way. Verse 18, do good, be rich in good works, be generous, be ready to share. And when you do that, when you use your money in the way that God expects us to, verse 19, they're getting ready for heaven. They're storing up a good foundation, the treasure for a good foundation for the future. So God simply tells them to use it well. So let's make sure we understand money correctly. Money itself is amoral. It's not moral or immoral. It's just a thing. And our attitude toward it and how we use it is what makes it good or bad. Look in Haggai chapter 1. Haggai chapter 1. Third to the last book of the Old Testament. If you see Zechariah, take a left. Haggai chapter 1. Any comments as we're all trying to find the book of Haggai? I knew we were going there, so my marker's there. Anything you want to say as we're flipping over there? Haggai chapter 1. The setting here was that the Israelites had returned from exile. A lot of them had, and they're supposed to rebuild God's temple, but they had not yet done that, and they're getting in trouble now. Haggai 1 and verse 4, is it time for you yourselves to dwell in your paneled houses while this house lies desolate? So the temple's not rebuilt. You built your own house, notice that, but God's temple is desolate. Verse 8, go up to the mountains, bring wood, and rebuild the temple that I may be pleased with it and be glorified, says the Lord. You look for much, but behold, it comes to little. When you bring it home, I'll blow it away. Why? Declares the Lord God of hosts. Because of my house which lies desolate, while each of you runs to his own house. Okay, so here's just an example of many we could choose, of where God's agenda, for one reason or another, gets put on the back burner. And that's what they had done. You know, it wasn't that they didn't have time to do anything. They'd built their own houses. It wasn't that they didn't have resources or the wherewithal, the mental ability. I mean, again, they'd done their own houses. It's just the priority wasn't there to take care of the temple like they should have. And so it was still sitting there. And Haggai the prophet is sent to light a fire under them, get them going with that project. Look in 1 John now. Go towards the end of the New Testament. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 17. Just trying to string some verses together here to try to show the theme through the Bible, which is wealth is not wrong in and of itself. Money's not bad. Material things are not bad in and of themselves, but we need to be using them in service to God and others. 1 John 3, 17. Whoever has the world's goods and sees his brother in need and closes his heart against him, how does the love of God abide in him? Little children, let us not love with word or with tongue, but in deed and truth. Okay, so the more money we have, the more opportunities we have to help people in need. By the way, notice it's not that material possessions are the only way to help somebody that's in need. But that's what this is talking about. Verse 17 said, whoever has the world's goods. So here's somebody that has something. And if you got the world's goods, and here's somebody in need, share with them. That's how you share the love of God with somebody, is to treat your neighbor like that. So again, it's important to God, therefore it should be important to us. Psalm 37, go to the next one on the list, please. Psalm 37. Similar statement here. Psalm 37, we'll just look at verse 21. The wicked borrows and does not pay back, but the righteous is gracious and gives. The righteous is gracious and gives. That's the way the righteous person thinks. Here's something I've got, and I'm going to give it. Not just money, not limited to that, but The wicked borrows, does not pay back. The righteous has that free, generous spirit. Righteous is willing to be gracious and just give. One who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deeds. Proverbs 19 and verse 17. I came across this quote years ago. James Forbes said, "Nobody gets to heaven without a letter of reference from the poor." I thought that was pretty good. You think about in the Old Testament where God had repeated provisions in the law for the Israelites that they do things that would help poor people. So when they would harvest their fields, for example, leave a little around the edges for people to come. Let the orphans and widows and folks like that come, the aliens, and let them harvest it. Just let them have it. Or if you forget a sheaf, don't go back and get it. Just leave it there. Somebody will get it that needs it. That sort of thing. That was constantly in God's law, just kind of interspersed throughout that. Deuteronomy 24:19 is one of those places. But God constantly had that in his mind. You can tell because it pops up all throughout Scripture and the codified law, especially that he had for Israel. And we see that in the New Covenant as well. All these verses reminding us, help people. Just be generous. Not an amount. It's not like so many dollars per month or whatever, but just help people. As opportunities come along and you can meet it, do things for people. Okay, let me pause there. Any comments, questions, anything you want to add to the discussion so far? Brent?
It just occurs to me as we talk about this is that, you know, anything we possess has some sort of utility to it. There's some way it can be used. And whatever we do with our money, a lot of consideration should be given to what its utility is. And how it can best be used and how it can best be spent to help others and you know, think of what the purpose and the motivation behind it is. And I'll tell you something that I think of it about this congregation, and I'm probably missing some people, but I can think of at least four families, maybe five or six, but at least four that come to mind that have purposely, when they built a new house, built it with a large living area so they could have Friday night Bible studies and have as many people as they can. And those people, just in my mind, I haven't seen their income statements, but I'm pretty sure they're of varying degrees of wealth. But they did that so that they could have this super encouraging, positive, uplifting event that we have here once a week. And you know, how much good that does. I mean, that's just exceptional in my mind.
Yeah, great example of what we're talking about. Exactly what we're talking about.
Todd? Lazarus. Abraham tells, when the rich man asks Abraham to send Lazarus to with the cool water, Abraham told him, you had your good things, and Lazarus had evil. That nobody gets to heaven without a letter of reference from the poor. The rich man had his opportunities to help Lazarus.
Yeah.
And
he apparently did not. Right.
Apparently did not. So he had his good things. Lazarus had his evil. And see where that got him.
As Tim just
preached, he had his price. He focused apparently on enjoying life while he was here on earth and neglected God because he was lost in the afterlife. Okay, ma'am?
One time, a Christian, about our duties to the poor, and it was his opinion that our duties as Christians it's limited, if not just none at all, because we live in a country that has a safety net, and we pay taxes, and that's what provides for that. And we really didn't come to an agreement on that, but I think there are other people that have that opinion.
Okay, that's a good point.
And our country is unique in that it does have Social Security and things like that. And so a lot of times widows are not completely destitute like in the Old Testament it would have been. But that does not mean that our obligation, as we're reading in all these verses, is just gone. The government will take care of it, and I don't have to love my neighbor anymore. So, yeah, good point. Glad you brought that up. Good for us to think about, ma'am.
The example, but if anybody's seen the Christmas Carol with Ebenezer Scrooge, that's one thing. They ask him to help the poor, And he says, don't we have institutions? And he says, what about the orphans and the widows? And he said, we have institutions for those. That's what I pay my taxes for.
Okay.
That's what they go for. Then after he had the realization that he was soon going to die and all the things that happened in between, then he became very generous with his riches.
Yeah.
And he, the next time they came, he gave an amount that he whispered, and the guys just couldn't believe that he would give that much to the poor when before he would not give it.
Okay. All right.
And again, all of this starts in the heart, that if I just love my neighbor, then naturally an extension of that is going to be I'm going to help them. You know, if I have the opportunity and ability to help in some way, whether it's money or something else, some help them with some project or talk to them or whatever it is, then I'm gonna do that. Even if there are others or some institution that might also be able to help. Kaylin?
Things that you can't just give up cold turkey, you need them to live on. And so it's a constant, you can view it as a constant test as a way to put God first, which is a blessing to be able to sacrifice it and show him with the way that you spend your money or whatever other thing is required that you can't give up. It's just a constant test and testament to God that you're putting him first.
Okay. Yeah,
exactly right. And it's going to manifest in these other ways, money being one of them. Let me read a couple more verses here. Give to him who asks of you, and do not turn away from him who wants to borrow from you. Matthew 5:42. Be hospitable to one another without complaint. 1 Peter 4:9. In Matthew 25, when Jesus is describing the judgment scene, one of the things he says, or a few of the things that he says about those who end up lost on the judgment day is to say this: I was a stranger and you did not invite me in, naked and you did not clothe me, sick and in prison and you did not visit me, and so forth. In other words, we can avoid a lot of pitfalls with money by not just going out and wasting it, for example, not going to Vegas and blowing our money and that sort of thing. We can avoid that. We're not reckless. We're not wasting it away like that. We can work hard. We can save diligently. We can do all of that stuff. We can do a lot of things right by not wasting money or obsessing over money, but then still fall short of what God is expecting us to do with that money. I save it. I'm responsible. But then I don't use it. I'm just keeping it for whatever, myself or just to have it and trying to feel secure that way maybe. But I'm still falling short. God wants us to use it. All resources that we have are to be used in God's service. And we should use money as a tool for God's work. And we ought to be looking for opportunities. Opportunities usually find us, but we ought to keep our eyes open and look for opportunities to do that very thing. Look in Ephesians chapter 4, please. Ephesians chapter 4, one of those passages talking about becoming the new person, out with the old, in with the new person. And as part of that, notice what he says in verse 28. Ephesians 4:28, he who steals must steal no longer, but rather he must labor, performing with his own hands what is good, so that he will have something to share with one who has need. So here's somebody that converts to Christ. Maybe they used to steal stuff before, you know, just to help make ends meet each month. But you're putting that away. That's gone. Now you're no longer doing that. And then on the positive side, you're going out, you got a real job, you're working, you're being productive, and now you're trying to be generous and share and help one who's in need. Look in James chapter 2, please. Same idea here. James chapter 2. Remember, this is a passage about faith, having faith in God, but he's illustrating what that faith does, and it takes action. James 2 and verse 14. What use is it, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but has no works? Can that faith save him? And then here's the example. If a brother or sister is without clothing and in need of daily food, and one of you says to him, go in peace, be warmed and filled, and yet you do not give them what's necessary for their body, what use is that? Okay, so there's another example. It's just, you know, you start thinking about all the passages in the Bible have to do with money or material things. It's a ton of them. They're all over the place. If we start paying attention, and here's another one like that in this great passage about faith. So I've got the ability to do something. I ought to do that, not just tell them, be warmed and be filled. So imagine if you could work it into your budget, put $5 or $10 aside per month. This is just going to be my generosity fund, and therefore I have something. Maybe it doesn't have a bunch of zeros on it, but I've got something to to help when the need inevitably comes along, and there will always be opportunities that come along for some sort of generosity. And so, you know, here's somebody that's down and out, and I take them to lunch. It's 3 months in, so I got $30. That's about what it costs to almost eat out anymore. And so I go take them out. And so I just have that as part of my plan, whatever your number might be, but this is part of my plan in life, is I'm trying to just put a little aside so that I can help when the need comes. And we probably won't have to worry, well, who am I going to help? You know, if I save money up, how am I going to find the people that need help? They'll find you. The opportunities will find you. I think the Lord blesses us through his providence with opportunities to do things that we're planned and prepared and ready to do. So if our heart's ready, if our wallet is ready, those opportunities will provide themselves. Look at Luke 15, the last one here, and I'll ask for some more comments. Luke chapter 15, and in verse 13, and not many days later, the younger son gathered everything together, went on a journey into a distant country, and there he squandered his estate with loose living. Okay, so I understand this is just Jesus telling a story to illustrate a point, which is not about money at all. The point Jesus is making in Luke 15, the three illustrations, is that we ought to rejoice when sinners repent. And here's this prodigal son that's going to end up repenting, and the older brother has a terrible attitude, the dad has a wonderful attitude, and we ought to be like the dad and not the older brother. That's the point of the story that Jesus is illustrating here. But he does talk about a situation here that happens all too often, where you've got this sum of money, whatever it is. In his case, it's an inheritance that he gets early, and he squanders his estate with loose living. The New King James has the word prodigal there, so we usually call this the story of the prodigal son. Prodigal just means wasteful or foolish or things like that. So think about this. Somebody like this, and there's plenty of times like this where maybe we've acted like this in our lives and plenty of people like this in the world, just wasteful, never have money because it just burns a hole in their pocket. They spend it as soon as they earn it. Is this young man in a position to help anybody financially? Not right now. Not in verse 13, he's not. Earlier he might have been when he still had some money before he blew through it all. But now he's not in a position. He can't even help himself. He certainly can't help anybody else. And so planning, preparing, trying to be wise with money is not a bad thing. This is God's wealth that I am blessed with temporarily while I'm alive on this planet. And I'm trying to manage God's wealth in such a way that I can responsibly take care of myself, my family, and then hopefully be in a position that I can help others as opportunities come along, and they most certainly will. So let's think about God's money in that way. It's a tool to be used for him. Okay, let me pause there for comments. Any questions, anything to add to the discussion? Wyatt?
A good way to summarize what you said for James 2 was build wealth and give.
Okay.
The Dave Ramsey quote.
Okay, yeah. Now, I'm not the one who brought up Dave Ramsey, okay?
All right, there it is, yeah. Good job. Okay, sir?
In Luke chapter 12, verse 20, where a rich young man had all these barns and stuff, his crop was great, he's going to tear his barns down, rebuild, and increase, and be happy, and be married, eat, drink, and be married. And God tells him, fool, this night your soul is required of you, and the things that you have prepared, whose will they be? And that's every one of us. It doesn't matter if you're Elon Musk, there at one point, a homeless man living in a tent under a bridge somewhere. We're all going to die. And whatever you have, you're not going to take it with you.
Okay.
So
exactly
if you don't
right.
use it wisely, then like in Ecclesiastes, it'll go to somebody who didn't earn it, didn't work for it, but they're enjoying the fruits of your labor.
Okay. Great point.
Sir?
Those situations to where we humans make judgments on individuals, but ultimately God knows where our hearts are, where our treasures are laid up. And individually, just like we do with screen time or anything else, we've got to judge ourselves on where our treasure is. How much time do we spend obsessing about money?
We need to be thinking about brethren or serving our brothers or looking for those in the community that we could serve. And it's an internal thing. You know, on the outside, we can all make judgments on each other of, oh, you know, they're obsessed with this or they don't care about money. They're very foolish with their money. But internally, God knows. And we need to continually do that gut check to see where we stand before our Creator.
Okay. That's a great
tag on the both of us. The less you have, the more you're willing to help those in need. And the more you have, the less you want, because you start judging, you start comparing, saying, well, I need to take care of myself in 50 years, therefore I can't give up what I have now. Right? Versus someone who's been in that destitute situation, has a little money now. They're willing to help now the person in that destitute situation, regardless of what happens to them in the year. And so that mindset starts shifting more to myself. I've got to continue to save to protect me in 50 years versus those in need now. It becomes an excuse, right, of where, you know, I need to hoard what I have. The story Ray, I think, mentioned, right, about you might die tomorrow.
Yeah.
Help the guy today.
Yeah. Yeah. So great point. That's interesting.
I'm glad you said that. I didn't know there were studies about that. That's pretty interesting. Yes, ma'am.
You said God will provide you with opportunities to help those in need. So a while back, I had a friend whose maintenance guy, he has family of six, and his house caught on fire. The only thing they walked out with was what they were wearing. And so, you know, my friend was asking, hey, you know, I'm looking for donations if your family has any donations to give. And I'm particular about my things. Like, I buy things because I like them, I want them. And I have a hard time, you know, letting go of some of my things. And one of my really wise friends had, you know, reminded me that, like, these are just ordinary things for me that I can replace. But what's ordinary and replaceable for me is a blessing for them. And she told me that, like, you know, if I've given these opportunities and I don't jump on them and help in some kind of way, then that's something I'm going to have to answer for when I'm being judged.
Okay, all right.
Something that's always stuck
with me. We have to
work on our attitudes to get in the right space. That's a good illustration. Ma'am?
I think a summation might be in connection with what Brother Lester said is Matthew 6, 19 through 21.
Yeah, we're
about treasure. Your treasure is where your heart is.
Where they don't moth or rust or thieves.
Yeah, he's breaking and still serving
yourselves treasures in heaven where neither moth nor rust destroys, where thieves are not breaking and steal, for your treasure is there, your heart will be also.
A lot of people that lesson.
Right, right.
That's right. You get the final word
this morning. Pressure's on.
Well, I was thinking about saving the future of yourself. I guess it boils down to you can save the future of yourself and not necessarily yourself. In the future, you won't be a burden, but you can say for the future that you'll be able to take care of others. So, yeah, you might say the future is not necessarily being for yourselves.
Sure. Pardon.
Trying to plan and be responsible for what's coming. Okay, thank you for your attention this morning. We will plan, Lord willing, to continue this study next Sunday morning. Thank you.